Welcome to Women in WP,
a bi-monthly podcast about women who blog, design, develop, and more in the WordPress community.
Welcome to the show. I'm Angela Bowman.
And I'm Amy Masson.
Our guest today is Miriam Goldman, a technical lead for Canopy Studios, as well as co-organizer of the Ottawa WordPress Meetup and part of the WordCamp Ottawa organizing team since 2017. Welcome, Miriam.
Thank you for having me.
As you know, we like to start off each episode by asking our guests about their journey into WordPress. How did you get started?
So in 2008, I was helping some friends out with their church band, and they decided that they wanted to go to other churches and do some worship sections there. So they wanted to have biographies for their little band, and they knew I was a web developer, so they wanted me to build them their web page, but they wanted to manage their content. And I'd only done static HTML sites at that point. So I did my research into all the CMSs that were out at the time, and I felt that WordPress was the most user-friendly and the easiest to do things in, and that's where I got in.
And what year was that that you did that band website?
I want to say it's 2008, maybe 2009.
Okay, so yeah, that's about the same time that I was looking for a CMS and trying to figure out what's the best one. And I also came up with WordPress after experimenting with several because I thought my clients would be able to do it.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that's about the time that I started in 2007 having been a Dreamweaver person, and I was just blown away that you could add pages and have them like be in a menu without having to like create a button for the menu and add it in your HTML. Like, that was the thing that I was most wowed about WordPress, besides the content editing, was that the navigation just happened. What was the thing that was your big, wow, I really love WordPress moment?
For me, it was just the ease of a content editing, and also the fact with the templating system. Because I really, really like the templating system. I didn't have to try and build something like in a frame set or anything like that.
Yeah, having to build tables or frames was very painful.
Yep.
And I started with the HTML websites too, and I was also a Dreamweaver person, Angela. And I remember there used to be, and I mean, maybe there still is because I don't do it anymore, but some kind of like global type settings you could create in Dreamweaver and apply it to your site. So like your menu and header and footer would all be the same, and you didn't have to go back and change every single page. And I remember discovering that and that in Dreamweaver and thinking, oh wow, this is going to change everything. And then I found WordPress, where that was just how it worked.
Yeah. Yeah. I think making that transition can be so liberating. But then you also, having done that, you became involved with the WordPress community. How long did it take you to find out that there even was such a thing as a WordPress community, and how did you get involved?
It took me a long time. So in 2013, Ottawa had their first WordCamp. So my manager at the time where I was working suggested that I go. So I did. And I thought, wow, this is really cool. There's WordPress experts who are local who could teach me things that I could take back to my job. So I went back the next year. And then the following year, we didn't have any in Ottawa. So I went to the one in Montreal, only 2 hours away. And I started to make friends with people then. So that's where I got to know Sean Hooper. That's where I got to know Megan Haynes. And I'm like, okay. And then the following year is when it started to click. And I'm like, maybe I'll speak this year. So I spoke for the first time in 2016. I did a lightning talk. And at the time, I didn't have the confidence for public speaking. So after I finished my talk, I'm like, I'm never going to speak again. But hey, I'm good at organizing things. Do you want help with running the camp next year? And so I joined the organizing team for 2017. And then things just took off because I had an idea to run a Women in WordPress panel, and that was super well received. And I just gained accepted to WordCamp and WordCamp and WordCamp. And so that's when I started going to the more national and international community. And that's just where it all came out of, just me saying, a panel would be a fun idea, and I like helping out.
So I really need to know more about the very first Women of WordPress panel. What inspired you to come up with this idea? Who was on it, and what did you guys talk about?
So I became inspired with it because I realized that I was good at speaking. It was just the slides that I was bad with. And this is when the Me Too movement was really starting to pick up steam. So I wanted to help give fellow women's voices more of a platform at WordCamps. So there is myself, there was my friend Christy Witt, who is also an organizer. Megan Haynes was our moderator. We also had Kathleen Presner from Montreal. And we had Tina Turovic, I believe her last name is, from Toronto. And we also had another woman named Laura, who wasn't really involved in the WordPress community, but she was new to WordPress. So I wanted to get different levels of experience, different roles. I'm a developer, Christy is a designer, Laura is a user. And we just talked about what our struggles were getting into WordPress, what our biggest accomplishments were. And we talked about advice we would give women just getting started in WordPress. And then I don't recall all the audience questions, but we did about half prepared questions and half audience questions. And we just turned it into a conversation, really.
And why have I not ever seen this at any of the WordCamps I've been to? Have you been out of Canada with this idea?
I have. I was at, in 2017, I was in New York City, Seattle, and Rochester.
Okay.
2018, I was in Miami and LA. And I did not go out of the Canada last year. I was supposed to be in Buffalo this year, but we don't know what's happening.
Well, you know, maybe sometime when you're doing that, if you need somebody from the Midwest as a, you know, representative on your panel, you just give me a call.
That's actually what I'm planning on, is once I start looking at camps for next year, because I've already outlined my camps for this year. I'm looking at maybe Chicago, looking more around the Midwest, going out to those places that I haven't been to, but I really think would be fun to visit.
Awesome. No, I would love to at least see one of those. I haven't been at the same camps, and we did submit to, you know, do a panel like that at WordCamp US. We were not selected. I'm not bitter. It's fine. but I think when I was newer to this, that would have been something that would have been very inspiring to see at a WordCamp, is just somebody that showed up not really knowing anybody or much. I was like you, I didn't know about the community until 2013. So, and even then it took me a few years to get comfortable, like introducing myself and meeting people, and even longer to actually give a talk.
Yeah, I'm finding, I just did a lookup on WordPress.tv, and there are these panels. And I think that should be like assigned listening for all of the Women in WP podcast listeners and us hosts. But
well,
there's,
we'll put those in the show notes, and yeah, then everybody can go watch them and then come back and comment on them.
Yeah. I think that would be a fabulous, like, kind of a virtual book club. We'll have a little video WordCamp club.
It's homework, which feels good to me since I used to be a teacher. So it makes sense. Everybody go watch your shows, come back prepared to discuss, have your questions ready.
In fact, every episode, I think we should just assign homework. and we'll start feeling more productive with this. I am seeing here that WordCamp Miami 2018 is up. Yep. WordCamp Seattle 2017, New York City 2017, Rochester 2017, and there was, not related to you, but a Women on WordPress panel in Mumbai in 2014.
Oh, wow.
So lots to choose from there. And I think that's, and there's also Los Angeles 2018. So you were very busy in 2018.
2017, 2018. Yeah. Yes. I was very busy. I was very glad for my timing in 2018 because when I was in Los Angeles, Ottawa had a tornado. So I basically missed a tornado hitting my city.
So if you've been on, are you on these panels? Are you more the moderator or member of the panel? And how has your sense of being like a public speaker and in front of an audience evolved over time since you were so nervous that very first time?
So I've been a moderator because I like to let other voices take center stage. Like I'll interject once in a while, but I rather help elevate other people's voices than be the one who's constantly heard. So I found that helping to guide a conversation is just a lot more comfortable for me because while I'm not a teacher by profession, I'm a karate instructor. And so being a karate instructor, you learn how to guide your students. So I've taken that, and that's another talk that I've done is called Lessons from the Dojo. That's one of my solo talks. And so I found that over time, and then obviously getting comfortable with the moderation, getting more comfortable with slides, learning how to deal with Q&A, and that we can thank Jill Binder's Diverse Speaker Training Workshop, which is another group that I'm involved in. And just all that combined, like it's just one of those things that just took time and just practice. And every time I did it, I got more and more comfortable to the point where I was able to adapt one of my WordCamp talks and give it internally for one of our, we do a weekly kind of like a lunch and learn. And so I gave one of my WordCamp talks internally to the company and it was very well received.
So for your day job, when you're not doing, you know, elevating women in the WordPress community and attending WordCamps and organizing WordCamps, what is it that you do there? And is it remote? And tell us more about that.
So at Canopy Studios, everybody is remote. So it's a fully distributed workforce across Canada and the US. So my job is a WordPress technical lead. So I'm kind of like I like to describe it as the go-between, the project manager, and basically the non-tech lead developers. It's almost like I'm a senior developer with the extra steps. So my responsibilities are the architecture of the project, scoping out tasks, helping the project managers make sure that things are on track, working with the clients so they can have like a face to their technical contact. And also obviously coding as well, because I'm not there just to assign stuff. I'm responsible for delivering good code as well.
So how many people did you say are part of the company?
I think we're about 35-ish right now.
Wow. And when you're working on a project with that many people, so, you know, I'm a very small company and we have, you know, depending on how you count, 4 to 6 people. You know, I feel like when you have 35 people, is everybody working on the same projects? Is it broken up? How does that work?
So it's broken up because Canopy does both Drupal and WordPress. So most of the people we have a larger Drupal team than a WordPress team. So I'm honestly not sure how they decide to divide the projects, but usually you have an account lead, a client lead, a technical lead, and then an additional developer or two depending on the size. So right now I've been working with most of my projects with just 1 to 2 other developers. And so basically I find out what the tasks that they really like. Like one of my colleagues, she is, we call her our front end goddess. She can do all these amazing things on the front end. And then we have another guy, he loves doing nav menus. He loves doing custom plugins. So it's like trying to figure out what type of tasks interest and fall under the strengths of my colleagues and give it to them and not just try and hoard it all for myself. Because I like doing front end, I like doing back end, I like doing plugins, but it's kind of like share the wealth.
That's amazing. I feel like I just would have such a hard time trusting anyone to do anything that I was good at. So that must be great to have colleagues that you feel are super competent in what they're doing.
I truly believe that it's good to work with people you think are smarter than you. You can be one of the most competent people in the world, but I always like seeing people who are smarter and better than me in a certain aspect, because it forces me to learn and get up to their level.
Yeah, that's awesome. And especially when you are in an environment like that, since I'm more of a solopreneur and the people that I end up contracting with or working with are doing completely different things. For example, I might be working with a designer or a content writer, and I'm totally fine giving them that responsibility. And I might give them more feedback about, you know, that's going to be a bit hard to code, or that's not, you know, super practical for responsive design and that kind of thing. But what I kind of miss in that environment is I don't have people I can learn from, you know. And I used to work in a software company, and I loved that I was surrounded by dozens of people who were smarter than me. And it was just such a vibrant and exciting space to be in. And that sounds like kind of what you have, is you're constantly stimulated by that environment.
And it's so good, because at my previous employer, it was a wonderful job. And I loved my colleagues. I had a great boss, and my colleague was great. But we were three people. We were two designers and a developer. So I pretty much had my boss got us the development work. He didn't get us anything too crazy, but basically he's like, okay, this is what we need to get done. How long do you think it's going to take to do, and how much should I charge a client? So I pretty much had carte blanche to do what I wanted to make sure that we got that. And it was nice, but if I ran into a problem, I had nobody to bounce it off of. And so I had to use my Google foo all the time.
Yeah, welcome to my world.
People really underestimate how important those Google skills are.
Yeah, I'm definitely feel like the only way I've been able to do anything that I do is through Google Foo, which, you know, has its limitations. And when I've had a chance to work with other people, it's definitely been awesome. Tell me, through your all of these panels that you've been on, has there been any themes that have emerged for you as you are talking to people and asking questions of people in terms of women's experiences in WordPress and their career trajectories, or things that either come up as challenges? Give us some highlights from some of your panels.
I'm just trying to remember some of them. I mean, everyone has been different, and definitely I've noticed some differences between the American panels I did and the Canadian panels I did, because I did it in Ottawa and I did it in Niagara Falls, and I did in Calgary as well. Calgary last year, they haven't published it yet, but oddly, I found that most of the women I've talked to have just been so resilient. And the fact that, yes, a lot of people have had like environments where they've been mansplained to and where they've been undervalued. But most of the women on the panels, they've just been like, I don't need to take this. So they've just taken it upon themselves to just keep on pushing through and not let it weigh them down. So that's been the main theme, is that resilience and just not letting the negativity and the fact that there's that whole like misconception of like, it's gotten better, but let's face it, there's still that misconception of women aren't as good in tech as guys, which is complete BS, but as we know. And also one big thing is about 95% of the women I've had on my panel, and myself included, imposter syndrome has been a big, big thing.
And that's something that we have been talking about in some of our shows lately, is how women seem, in at least in what I've observed, seem to struggle more with imposter syndrome than men. And I wonder, you know, why is that so prevalent among women, and why do women never think they're good enough? Well, I mean, that's something that I guess is in all aspects of our life, we're always told we're not good enough. And whereas men project, you know, I think they experience imposter syndrome, but it's different. And I don't know, I can't put my finger on exactly how.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I've never really thought of it to that extent, but that would definitely be worth exploring, is the same. It's like, why do women tend or seem to like struggle with it more than men, or at least are more upfront with it, with dealing with it? Because I'm sure there are some men out there who probably deal with it, but just don't talk about it.
Hi, Women in WP listeners. This is Angela with a quick note from our sponsor, Malcare. The thing I like most about Malcare is how simple it is to use. Unlike other security plugins that have an array of confusing options that you have to figure out whether or not to turn on and if they will break your site, is you simply install and activate Malcare. That's it. It blocks brute force attacks to your site instantly and protects your site with a firewall. Regular security plugins are quite resource intensive because if they provide any sort of scanning, the scanning happens directly on your hosting server, which can really slow down your site. Malcare, on the other hand, copies your site encrypted to their dedicated cloud servers, so all of the scanning processes occur in the cloud, ensuring that Malcare never impacts the performance of your site. Malcare's regular, deep, clean scanning of your files and database can dynamically detect even the most complex malware. This ensures that you're the first to know if your site or client's site has been hacked. Using Malcare's one-click instant removal tool makes your site malware-free in minutes at a fraction of the price of other security services. To get started with Malcare and take advantage of their expert team of security support, please visit malcare.com Women in WP for 10% off your first year of protection, or see the show notes for a link. Now back to the show.
There are times when I've wanted to have some, just a men's day on Women in WP, and just have a little talk with a couple men and just ask them if they've listened to the podcast, their impressions, and also if they resonate, because I imagine that there are things that cross both genders, but it's more, like you said, who's willing to talk about it or not, and how much is some of our experience just about what we're willing to make public and bring to the front. And but yeah, it is interesting that people do have very different perspectives and experiences, and they can't even really relate to the other experience at all because they just haven't experienced it. And so they don't understand what it's all about. I'm trying to think of a good follow-up question about anything else related to those panels in terms of what maybe level that community has maybe helped the women that you've had on the panels. Like, because you've gotten involved with the community and it seems like it's benefited you. And like, what specific ways has it benefited you? And have you heard that same thing from other people?
It's benefited me because it's gotten my name out there. People know who I am. Like, I'm not some random Canadian from Ottawa coming to apply to a WordCamp that they've never heard of. I'm somebody who's involved in the community, and I know people. I'm not just coming with some random idea. So it is likely helping me for the WordCamps that don't do blind selections, that do weigh in, like, is the speaker well known within the community? Have they spoken before? It's definitely helped me get into more WordCamps as time has gone on. And as for others, most of the people I've had are actually pretty well known already in the community. Tessa Crusell, Bridget Willard, Michelle Thomas from Bluehost was on one of my panels. Catherine Presner, she's pretty well known up here in Canada. So it's just been one of those. And in the very least, it's benefited me and everybody in the building friendships. Like Sandy Edwards, I still talk to. So Bridget.
And how do you go about, you know, recruiting and finding the people that you want to be on your on your panel?
I usually get the organizers' help. So I tell the organizers that, look, I'm looking to try and get some people from your local community. At least half of the panel I want to be local. And I want to look for basically different backgrounds, such as designer, developer, marketer. But I also want different ethnicities because I don't want it to be a panel of white women. So I want to get African Americans. I want to get Asian Americans. I want to get Latinas on there. And my goal one day is to get somebody from the LGBTQ community on there. And I'm even considering pivoting a bit and getting a non-binary voice on there. Because I think their voices are important too. And it's just, they're not being heard. So that's what I do is I try and I talk to the organizers, and if they can't help me, then I put out a call on Twitter for a couple of the panels saying, hey, would you be interested in being on this panel? Please contact me at this email address. And then usually I don't get like a swath of applications, but I get 4 to 5, and so I chat, give them the expectations, how I think it will go, and I say there's no pressure, but are you interested?
And do you have like your, before you submit, do you have like your plan of who's going to be on the panel, or do you submit, get accepted, and then go looking for your panel members?
I look for my panel members afterward because I don't want to have a bunch of panel members who suddenly get like, oh, we didn't get it accepted. Poop.
That's really fascinating. We're taking notes.
I think you could have started this podcast, Miriam.
Yes. I was wondering, so you're also involved with the diversity training for speakers. Is it for speakers, right?
Yes, a diverse speaker training group, the one that Jill Binder is the lead for.
Yes. And I run 2 meetups. One is a foundation-sponsored meetup, and one is not a foundation-sponsored meetup. What are, you know, like where I live in my city is, we don't have a lot of diversity. I do try to get at least women to come speak, and I've really had to, you know, encourage them in different ways because they might be super introverted and shy. And I just had a woman at our meetup last week and she was very hesitant about it. And I just told her, well, we could do it as a panel and, you know, just tried to ease it. Like you don't have to fully be responsible for this. And then everything moved to Zoom because of coronavirus. And she did this presentation that truly knocked our socks off. And I thought, wow, I really had to pull teeth to get her to do this. And it was one of the best we've had in quite a while. So what are the takeaways from your diversity speaker training that you feel like meetup organizers can do to try to increase that diversity in their meetups?
Well, the great thing about these workshops, it really focuses in on realizing that people just what are their barriers to speaking? Is it physical limitations? Is it the fact that they're scared stiff about speaking? And so the workshop, as it stands right now, gives different tools. It tells you how to write your proposal for your talk, how to come up with the title of your talk, how to write a bio for yourself. And then touches on imposter syndrome a bit. It touches on how to make great slides. So it's just some great tools that you can do. And the great thing about this workshop is it's not WordPress specific. If you run a general tech meetup and you want to get a diverse range of speakers, this is great. And it's great for first-time speakers. It's great for experienced speakers who might come from a different industry. So there's just so many tools that can be applied.
And how would somebody go about finding that workshop and getting enrolled?
So I believe it is tiny.cc/WP diversity. I'm gonna So if they go to that URL, they will come up, I believe, because right now we're shifting due to coronavirus, but I believe we might still be offering the training for these workshops to get people to run the workshops. So that's what my role is. I'm the trainer. So I'm the trainer who trains the trainers.
And I did get on here and I got on, involved with this when it first came out, and I wrote and said, I want to do this. So let us know if you'd like to run a workshop, but then I never heard back. And I'm wondering, should I go ahead and sign up again then?
I would sign up again because it may have been before I was involved. I may not have been a trainer yet. So that happened about 6 months into the establishment of this group.
So how would it work? Like if I'm a meetup organizer, would I sign up and you would teach me how to train other people, but then would I set up a specific time through my meetup to then invite people to be trained?
Yes. So that's how it works.
Okay.
So
okay.
People go to that URL, they fill in the form. Right now, just because of how everything is, we'll do like a one-on-one and determine the best time for myself or Angela Jin in Spain. She's the other trainer. So one of us will train you. It's basically a 2-hour Zoom call where we do a quick run through so you get familiar with the workshop. It's not to teach, we don't try and teach you everything in there, but just get comfortable with it. Then we give you resources. Here's your slides that you can use and adapt. Here's our Slack group that you can join. And we're always available to help you. And then we encourage them to, the meetup organizers, to let us know when they run the workshop. And then we just continue to follow up.
And I did send a message out to my meetup group, which has a lot of people, like over 1,000, saying, hey, I'm going to do this workshop. Would anyone be interested? And I just like crickets. But I think, I bet if I put it on meetup.com as a real event with a real date, and I'm going to teach you how to do this, I'd probably get people signed up.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's nice for me to know this is how it works, that you're going to train me and then I'll train them. And that might be really cool.
Yeah.
I'm excited. What have you heard any sort of feedback from people who ran this training, that did they end up getting people actually take the training and do talks, and do you have success stories?
I personally don't have them off the top of my head, but I know there definitely have been some success stories, and it's something I'll have to dig in and I'll get, after this recording, I'll send to you. But I know we've definitely had some success stories, and it's why Jill has been able to get sponsored by the foundation to allow her to continue her work, and why we're still able to run this group, because there have been success stories. And I know, I think it was Vancouver, that through this workshop, they've actually managed to hit at least a 50-50, if not greater ratio, of women to men speakers.
Wow. That is so powerful. And I have heard that kind of anecdotally, that by providing training, by providing these formats and some handholding and mentorship of potential speakers, it really, really increases that. You know, just like with this woman, I really had to say, I need you, you're going to do this. I know you're frightened, but you have knowledge that people want. And she didn't even realize how much knowledge she had until she did it and got all the great feedback for it.
That is exactly one of the major things that we try to drive home, I guess, in the workshop is you'll be surprised with the knowledge that you have. You don't need to be an expert. You just need to be passionate about the knowledge you have and be willing to share it with others.
Yeah, I feel like when you spoke about how you gave your first talk and you felt like you never wanted to do it again, I identify with that a lot. Like, I feel like I have a lot of knowledge, but I get really nervous in front of my peers, and I just have never felt that that was a comfortable space for me. So that's why I like the podcast, because then I can talk and then I don't have to see people approve or disapprove of what I say. So it's much more comfortable space for me.
Totally get that.
And I wonder, how do you feel your first talk would have gone had you been received this training yourself?
I probably would not have run after the Q&A in tears.
Oh, that's you so left sad. After the Q&A in tears? Why?
It was just a confidence issue, looking back on it, because it's been 4 years. So I spoke on multilingual plugins. I spoke on that in Canada's national capital. I spoke on that to a technical crowd. My very first talk, lightning talk, but I felt at the time that I did not handle the Q&A properly, and I felt that I had totally butchered the talk. So I held it together while I was in the room, and then I got upset afterwards when I went to go talk to Sean and Megan. And so, of course, I got my feedback, and not much, but it was all like, okay, just slow down when you talk, and don't talk about yourself so much. I didn't know at the time. It was my first talk. And yeah. I think I would have had better slides. I would have already known not to talk so much about myself. So I probably would have felt better about it. And I likely would have started to speak at more WordCamps earlier.
I left a talk. I did my first talk. I was a nervous wreck. And they put me on the developer track, and I didn't feel like my talk was developer track talk, and it was a huge auditorium. It was really hard. But then I did another talk. It was the same topic. It was on WordPress security. And I had really come to some conclusions about WordPress security in that people were making it too complicated. And I had like, this is all you need to do. And I had my tips, my 10 things. And it was also a lot of developers in the room. And I just thought, at the end, I was so nervous, even though I felt confident in myself about how I had been experiencing this topic over many years with all my many clients. I wasn't sure that anyone would agree with me. I felt like I was really kind of going out there with these crazy ideas of, hey, you don't need to hack away at your HT access and all these files, you know, keep it simple. So I left a wreck. I didn't even want to go to the after party because I was such an emotional disaster. And I got to the after party, and Corey Miller's wife came up to me and she said, oh, hey, our team wants to talk to you. They really liked your talk. And Corey Miller's the owner of iThemes, and they have their iThemes security plugin. I'm like, really? Like, I was shocked. I was like, just thought I'd bombed in the biggest way and didn't want to show my face. And they're like, oh yeah, our security guy who writes the security plug, our security plugin just agreed with everything you had to say. And I'm like, are you serious? And they like took me under their wings and they set me up and sat me down with their security developer. And he said, oh man, and I just really loved that you said that backups are not a security thing. They're like a disaster recovery, but they don't really help you when your site's hacked. And, you know, like all these little points that I had made, he's like, I 100% agree. And I'm rewriting our plugin along all those same principles that you've said. And it was really affirming, but it's nice that you had those people to go back to and get that feedback. And I think in a way, doing a talk all by yourself and you don't have friends that you can necessarily ask for feedback would be devastating because you don't know if you did a horrible job or not. And even though you still cried, at least you had people to talk to. And do you feel like that helped you to kind of recover a little?
It definitely did because, again, I didn't want to go to the after party, but I got my butt up and I went. And again, Catherine, that's when I met her. That's when we chatted. And she's like, no, I think you did a good job. So, but here are some tips that can help you with your speaking. So it was just more of not so much about honing in on my talk itself, but reassuring me that I wasn't a total failure as a public speaker and that they were offering me resources to help me feel more comfortable because they all wanted to see me speak again. And here I am 4 years later.
And you spoke a lot.
I spoke a lot. If you'd asked me 4 years ago that I would be going on podcasts, I would have laughed in your face.
Well, I wonder if, you know, when women are speaking versus men, if I just wonder if men think about the same kind of things. Like I worry, am I being judged because of my looks or because of my weight or because of my voice or because of my slides or, you know, every single thing that somebody could possibly judge me or things I'm worrying about. And I wonder if men just don't think about all those different things when they're speaking.
Yeah, that's a good question. I've never really thought about that. That'd be interesting to ask men about that.
But we need a survey. We need a survey of men speakers and ask them and have men and women both submit the same survey. Oh my goodness. Homework for Amy. create the survey and just find out, because I just wonder if maybe the reason more men are volunteering to speak is because they're not as attuned to all the different ways that women are focused on, you know, feeling insecure about.
Yeah, I think tearing apart the whole ratio of men and women speakers is interesting. I think that with our WordCamp in Colorado, in Denver, we've managed a 50-50, but they've worked at it. They've consciously really looked at their speakers list and made an effort to make that have more women. But then there's other environments where I see, oh yeah, there's women, but they're like the panel moderator and they're not really the speaker. And I've been to other conferences where they have some dude just rambling on and on for an hour about his personal life story when you could have had a much more competent professional woman up there giving some real meaty talk. And I feel like that's partly on the part of the conference organizers and who they think is worth talking to or not. And even people themselves being wowed by some guy who confidently speaks for long periods of time about nothing versus a woman who has a lot of substance but maybe doesn't have the same exuberant personality about their empty topic that they want to talk about. You know, it's just amazing, I guess, to me what dudes can get away with blathering on about. And maybe as women, we're just much more critical of ourselves and like, well, I don't think we could get away with those kind of talks.
I think women are definitely much more critical of themselves.
In that public sphere kind of way. Tell us, in Ottawa, you know, we got to talk with Christy Witt, and I'm all intrigued that there's this whole Ottawa community and I've never been to Ottawa. What do you do up there for fun? And what are some of your hobbies?
Well, let's get into the hobbies first because it's very eclectic. So when we're allowed to go out and do things, as I mentioned, I am a karate instructor. So I train martial arts. I've been doing that for 13 years. I'm also a competitive Latin ballroom dancer that I've been doing that for 6 years. And I also play in a community band. I've played clarinet since I was in grade 7. So I've been playing clarinet for 23 years now. So I continued with it past high school because that was kind of like my first love. And just, I love it because we just laugh all the time. It's all adults in our community band. So we get to work, we get to play music, but we also laugh in between it. And our musical director, he's a great guy. He's just, we just joke around all the time. So those are my hobbies. And in terms of, so what I do for fun, it's that. And then reading, or just watching random YouTube videos. I love watching things like Bon Appetit or Alton Brown because I love to cook and I love to get inspired for different recipes and everything. One of my friends just sent me a YouTube channel called Sous Vide Everything. So I bought a sous vide stick about 2 months ago and I have been obsessed with it. And it's just, it cooks everything so fantastically if you add the right spices to it. And once I get a cast iron pan, it's going to be even better.
What? Describe this more. And also, you need to share a recipe.
Yeah. I have not heard of this stick. I need more information.
So basically, it's a stick that you kind of like screw onto the edge of a pot. And you vacuum seal your meat or vegetables. You add like herbs, spices, a little bit of sauce, not so much to overwhelm it. And it cooks under vacuum. So that's what sous vide means. So basically, the stick basically warms up the water and it circulates it to be even cooking. And you just submerge the vacuum sealed bag for however long you want to cook something. And it just comes out evenly cooked. And they suggest that you put a sear on it. I can't do that right now, but eventually I will be able to. And it just helps soak in the flavor. So I've done pork chops, I've done steaks. I haven't done chicken in it yet, but I did, I had some leftover maple syrup, so I did some honey maple carrots. Just basically sliced up carrots on my mandolin, put in some garlic powder, some maple syrup, some honey, cooked it for whatever, however long it was supposed to be. And I had it on the side of my rice, and that combined with my Instant Pot, I rarely use my oven now or my stovetop.
I was just looking at them on Amazon and I'm like, oh, this looks like something I can actually keep in my cabinet, unlike my Instant Pot, which is huge and I have nowhere to put.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to do some research and learn more about this item. Un-WordPress related, but I think WordPress related either. Both.
We have to eat.
Exactly.
And this is important stuff.
Well, I would like to thank you for being on the show today. And before we go, can you tell everybody where they can find you online?
Well, right now I'm taking a little bit of a break from Twitter, but when I do go back in a few days, I can be found at Miri Goldman. And I'm also on Instagram a lot. So that is Dancing Sensei.
Dancing Sensei, I like it.
I love it. That's awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for listening. Interested in being on the show? Sign up on our website, womenandwp.com. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram, and join our Facebook group to have conversations with other women in WordPress.